Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Unemployment is down in Central Ohio for the first time in 3 years, but the alchemy of economic well-being is a little bit more complicated than that, unfortunately. Joining us today for a 2012 economic forecast is Doug Buchanan. Doug, he is the Columbus Business First Managing Editor. Welcome back, Doug.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us is Bill Lafayette, owner of the economic consulting group Regionomics. Bill is set to speak later today at the Columbus Metropolitan Club on the economic outlook for 2012. Welcome back, Bill.
Thanks for having me back, Ann.
Question for our listeners. The unemployment rate in Central Ohio has dipped below 7% for the first time since December 2008. Is that the beginning of better things or the calm before the storm? What do you think? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Bill Lafayette, today you are releasing your Columbus Economic Forecast at the Columbus Metropolitan Club. You've been making a regional forecast for the past 13 years, but this year it's your very own forecast on behalf of Regionomics, your economic consulting firm. How does that change what you do?
Well, in previous years, I've always had a group of economists who've done forecasts with me. And I took those forecasts, averaged them together, and the average forecast was the forecast that we put out. This year, it's only me. I can't hide behind the crowd anymore.
So one of your predictions is that unemployment growth in the Columbus Metropolitan Statistical Area will improve somewhat in 2012, but will still be too slow to reduce unemployment meaningfully. What does that mean?
Well, what I'm predicting is a nice round 10,000 net new jobs, and that's about 1.1%. When you look at population growth in our region, it's about 1.1, 1.2% per year. And so that's enough job growth to sop up the new people coming in, but not, unfortunately, enough to sop up a lot of the people who are on the sidelines still from before.
And some people have dropped even off the sidelines. Doug, in November, Business First reported that the jobless rate, as we've mentioned, dropped below 7% for the first time since December 2008. But there was a catch. About 3,700 more people had jobs in November than in October, but the labor force shrunk by 6,000.
Right. I think that's a little known aspect of what the unemployment rate is, that if you stop looking for work, if you're a discouraged worker, as they call them, you don't count anymore. And we have seen a steady number of people in Central Ohio drop out of the workforce, and that is helping the unemployment rate. And as Bill will probably mention, as the economy begins to improve and people start having hope again and start looking for work, they're going to be added back in there, and they very well could bring the unemployment rate back up by simply looking for work if they can't find those jobs. And as if Bill's prediction holds, there won't be enough jobs to sop up the new people and the people coming back into the labor force.
If you're just joining us, it's All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest today, Doug Buchanan, he's a managing editor at Columbus Business First. And Bill Lafayette, owner of the economic consulting group Regionomics. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Bill and Doug, but Bill first, if it was just about unemployment rates, wouldn't life be wonderful? But it's about a lot of other things, like what?
Well, I really pay much more attention to the growth in employment, the number of jobs, than I pay to the unemployment rate, in part because of the problems with the unemployment rate we were just talking about, and in part because those statistics that give us the number of jobs also tell us what sectors those jobs are happening in. And honestly, not all jobs are created equal. Some help the economy more than others do. And it's important to understand where the growth is occurring so we can see what the impact on the economy is going to be.
And the other problem is, as those new jobs are created, is matching the skills that are needed in those jobs with the employees who are out there. And if you're talking about the displaced employees, people laid off, people who have lost jobs over the last several years, their skills are not necessarily matching the job skills that are required by these newly created jobs. So you can create lots of open positions, but actually finding the workers to fill them is a completely another matter.
We're going to get to statistics on private education, which don't look so great. But, Doug, private education has done a pretty quick turnaround in terms of preparing students or trying to respond to this this gap in workforce development.
Right. I think that the regions and the states, community colleges, even the four-year universities, all colleges have done a commendable job over the past couple of years creating new programs, logistics, oil and gas exploration, casino workers. I mean, you name the hot industry that you're predicting, and they are creating programs to train those workers. It's just a matter, again, of getting them through the programs to match with the employers. But they are out there. They're talking to the employers. They're finding out what jobs are needed, what skills are needed, and they're doing their best to make that match made.
So, Bill Lafayette, getting back to the private education numbers, they went down by 7% employment numbers. But what does that mean? You're saying maybe it's not as reliable as you would like it to be?
Well, both these surveys, the survey that generates the unemployment rate and the survey that generates the job totals, are based on teeny tiny national samples. And when you slice and dice those down to a region the size of Columbus, you start getting into unreliability. And when you slice and dice them further to talk about individual sectors, the potential error can be just enormous. And so what we see every year is the statistics are revised to take account of better information that comes out a year after the fact. And so what we may well see is that 7% drop didn't really happen, but that's what we've got to go on now.
You know, another thing is is there anything particular about the Central Ohio region when you're looking at the region? For instance, Delaware County, does it still have the highest job growth in the state or the lowest unemployment rate perhaps in the state or one of the lowest versus Pickaway County, which has, I think it's 8.5% or something like that. But they're both in the Central Ohio region, right?
Yeah, there's a huge difference from one county to the next in terms of what their economic makeup is, what their workforce is like, and so forth. In Union County, a quarter of all jobs or more are in manufacturing. And you look at our region as a whole, we're well below average. We're like 8-9%, something like that.
And Union County obviously has all the Honda plants, right, all the Honda suppliers, and that was hit pretty hard over the—
Rebounded a little better than expected.
Right.
They really rebounded.
And they are rebounding. I mean, that you're seeing, especially the supplier network is starting to hire again as Honda ramps up the production. I mean, you had the recession that hit Honda, obviously, but then you had all those problems last year with the flooding in Thailand and the tsunami in Japan that caused the problems. Now that they've cleared that, you should start seeing the manufacturing employment ramp back up, especially out in Union County, but it has ancillary benefits throughout the region.
And they have catch up to do as well. So that does that affect things?
Well, yeah, I mean, they will. I think they're going to be much more careful about inventory and about staffing than even they were, you know, famously previously. But there is definitely some catch up that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Jonathan.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Given that unemployment is calculated in, I believe, six different ways now, in Central Ohio, what is the unemployment rate of the most inclusive way, the way that includes all the discouraged workers, all the part-time workers who want to work full-time? How many people percentage-wise are out of work in that number? Did I ask that question correctly?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I understood it, Jeff.
Yeah, so did I.
Okay, then I can take my answer off the air.
Okay, thank you for the call.
Yeah, that is a really great question. You can't measure that directly when you get down to Central Ohio, but you can sort of get a sense of how many people have dropped out of the labor force. I'm thinking something like 37,000 over the last few years. You add,
these are the ones that aren't being counted anymore.
Right. You add those back in. I did this a couple, 3 months ago, and you get an unemployment rate north of 12%. Now, you do the same thing at the national level. You get the same sort of result. So we're not necessarily any worse than anybody else, but we're not that much better.
Doug Buchanan?
I saw a number nationally that it included discouraged workers, and it also included part-timers who would like to have a full-time job, but are just taking, and they're especially taking jobs that don't really match what their skill sets are. They are just trying to find some manner of work. They put that number at 15.6% instead of 8.6 nationally. So it is dramatically higher if you use an inclusive number.
And that other group, the folks who are working part-time and so forth, you cannot include those.
I was going to ask, are those? What about people who are working two part-time jobs or three part-time jobs? Are those included as one?
Only once, because it counts the number of people working. But if you look at the job growth, you've got two jobs, one person.
And as far as the quality of the job, some jobs are worth more than others. How do we factor that in, and what do the numbers, what do things look like, and what number are we looking at when we factor that in? Is most of the job growth, you said, it depends on where you're at, service industry, lower paying jobs?
Well, you got to kind of think about the pay of the job relative to the skill of the worker.
Okay.
For example, there was a lot of hand-wringing a few years back about transportation and distribution jobs being so low-paying. But if you compare those jobs, even the entry-level jobs, with comparable jobs in other industries, you find that those jobs are making 12-15% more than comparable jobs in other industries. So the people taking those jobs are contributing more to the economy by their spending than jobs in other industries.
If you want to talk about the earning power of education and training, if you look at just people with a high school education, men with a high school education, the statistic I saw was that 40 years ago, today they make about $26,000 a year. Now, even 40 years ago, adjusted for that, they would have been making twice that amount. Whether it's a straight-up manufacturing job or whatever. So the wages, the relative wages for people with even just a high school education have gone dramatically lower as the high-paying, low-skilled jobs have left the country.
Part of that gap.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Part of the big gap. My guests are Doug Buchanan. He's managing editor for Columbus Business First, and also Bill Lafayette, owner of the economic consulting group Regionomics. We're looking forward to 2012, trying to make some sense of the economics of Central Ohio. If you have a question or comment, we welcome them. 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll also check the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page if you want to do that, or you can tweet me at Ann Fisher WOSU. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and many of our members have discovered the advantages of using the member card for two-for-one dining, cultural events, and family activities. Now there are additional benefits with the member card Benefit of the Month. The Benefit of the Month for January is Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra. Enjoy two-for-one admission to Happy Year of the Dragon, January 21st and 22nd. Become a basic $60 member and get your member card by going to WOSU.org now.
Support for 89.7 comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.
25 degrees in downtown Columbus, partly sunny skies today, a high of 34. Mostly cloudy tonight, a low of 26. Some sunshine for Thursday, a little warmer with a high of 41. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Today on All Sides, we're talking about the 2012 economic forecast for Central Ohio. Still with us, Doug Buchanan, managing editor of Columbus Business First. Welcome back, Doug, again.
Thank you.
And also with us, Bill Lafayette. He's owner of the economic consulting group Regionomics. He'll be speaking later today at the Columbus Metropolitan Club on the economic outlook for 2012. Welcome back, Bill, again.
Thanks, Ann.
So let's talk about some of those strengths in the local economy. Let's be upbeat for a second. And the educational and training resources available here. Back in November, Business First reported that the logistics business has grown in Central Ohio in the past decade. What surprised me about that was, well, of course it has. That's what we do, is we have things moving around, and there's warehouses, and that's what they've been doing for a long time.
Right. I mean, if you talk about taking advantage of the natural resources that you have, Texas has oil. We have location, and we are right in the middle of easy drive, easy distance to all the major population centers east of the Mississippi. So it makes sense. We have all that land down at Rickenbacker. We've got that huge airport, and they've just been building warehouses like crazy. Mm-hmm. They built an intermodal facility down there to get the shipments moved around more quickly, and it's just exploding. And they predict that this will continue. And so obviously you need lots of logistics workers. And that's where we were reporting about the area colleges going anywhere from a 3-week program at Columbus State up to a PhD program at Ohio State. And they're seeing the demand continue for those.
So you gave an example of a young woman who's enrolled at a joint Columbus State Franklin University program in supply chain management. She says it's probably one of the best majors no one has heard of, and there are a lot of great companies in Central Ohio, and I wondered, why is it that it's a surprise to everybody that this is something that's needed? Is it been that much of an explosion in the last 10 years, and that companies, I think you mentioned in one of the articles that companies haven't been very good about telling the education sector what they need?
Right. I mean, I think that is definitely part of it. And I think companies themselves are coming to realize that their supply chains are expanding. I mean, you're not, especially when you talk about international manufacturing networks, it becomes all that more important to manage the cost of moving goods around. And it's not just the limiteds of the world. I mean, you're talking about lots of different companies that can save money by better and more efficiently sourcing their materials. And it takes people knowledgeable in the logistics trade to be able to pull that off. And there are lots of third-party logistics companies around, but there are also a lot of people that are hiring those types of jobs internally to help them with that.
And it really didn't happen by accident. Over the last 10 years before the recession started, our growth in the transportation warehouse sector, which is really only part of what we're talking about, was 40%. And 20 years ago, we were 25% under average in this sector. Now we're, 20, 30, 40% above average. And that resulted from focus of the economic development community, an understanding of the benefits and advantages that we have in Central Ohio, and communicating those advantages to world markets.
And that's in the Columbus Chamber and the other economic development professionals. I mean, they have made logistics a continuing focus of development going forward.
Yes.
Delbert in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, hi, good morning, and how is everybody? Well, what I want to say is that I think that we have a infrastructure job plan that we could put into effect, because as we ride around the city and we see all these abandoned houses, and they were talking about that on the news this morning, and somebody said, well, why don't we do like we did before and sell the houses for $1? But to me, I'm thinking that why wouldn't an investor buy that property at a cheap rate, rebuild it, and sell it for profit? And even the government itself could do that. I mean, we subsidize low-income rent, and I've known people who the government has paid as much as $1,000 per month for low-income housing, when we should be doing something like rebuilding our infrastructure, tearing down these old houses. And there are a lot of jobs there that are non-skilled jobs and skilled jobs. And when we're talking about reconstructing when we talk about the freeways and highways, those are all skilled jobs.
Well, I was going to say when I saw the note saying you talked about fixing Columbus infrastructure, I was thinking roads and sewers and that kind of a thing. And Bill Lafayette, what are we when it comes to job creation and also Doug Buchanan? I was thinking you don't really drive the visiting executives who are looking at moving here to the bad neighborhoods. You show them the good stuff. Are the highways and the rest of that up to snuff as well?
They are. Our commute times are relatively low. But we have to keep real focus on this because we're starting to see serious bottlenecks down at Rickenbacker. There's a new highway being planned that's going to kind of travel east and west south of the airport to connect the new intermodal with Route 23. But you have to keep up with it. You really do. And you also have to encourage alternative transportation.
You know, that east-west connector down at Rickenbacker, I mean, that was, again, that would have been jobs that would have really helped Rickenbacker grow, and the federal government just recently awarded some new federal grant money, and Rickenbacker didn't win. As a streetcar project in Cincinnati and a passenger rail station in Cleveland got money, but not our infrastructure jobs created.
In other words,
plan.
It looks like the federal government's more interested in the alternative modes of transportation, perhaps,
right.
than Central
be
Ohio.
Both and.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And really
does.
The alternative modes of transportation is not a focus at all in Central Ohio now. They blew off the $700 million grant from the feds, and it's pretty much off the table. In long-term economic terms, does that mean never when you talk about those kinds of investments now?
I think for passenger rail in Ohio, if never is an awful long time, but that's probably pretty close.
In our lifetime.
In our lifetime, for sure. I just can't see it happening. And just similar to what that caller was saying, putting a lot of money into housing, into the housing industry, I don't see that happening either. That's just the money I don't think is there, and I don't think the will to go back in and to try to resurrect anything like that in the housing industry would be there either.
Rail will happen when 71 turns into a parking lot.
Right.
Delbert, thanks for your call. Take care. Matt in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. I'm curious if your guests can offer an opinion about what our unemployment would look like if we had not extended unemployment benefits to the 99-week range. If we had just chopped folks off back where it was about 50 or so, we'd still have more people out of work, but we'd have quit counting how many?
Bill Lafayette? Doug's pointing at you.
I'm going to kind of whiff on that. Who knows? Certainly you cannot take a job if there's no job to be taken. And that's part of it. There certainly are people who are unemployed because they can be, although I kind of shudder to think at the alternative.
You can't take unemployment if you're not looking for a job.
Right. But there's a program in Georgia that I really, really like, and that program says, okay, we will essentially pay for you to be trained on the job. And you go into a company, you're trained on the job, you continue to draw unemployment, but you get job skills. Part of the problem really is that when you've been out of work for 6 months, 9 months, or a year, many of the skills that you used to have, you've lost. And so it's going to take you some remediation to get those skills back and, as Doug said earlier, to get the new skills that employers are needing now.
And when can you least afford it? It's when you're unemployed.
Exactly.
Yeah, and Yeah, I think that there's I think that they've shown too that the people who are unemployed, there's kind of a black mark that with employers, they would much prefer hiring people from another job into that job than to hire someone who is unemployed. That's just a fact that that's out there in the market.
Perhaps another way to have asked that was, of the people on unemployment, how many of them are in the post 50-week range, and how many of them, because most people will get a job soon after they've lost theirs, how many are in the range that would have been standard before the extension?
I want to say something like 40% or so, but don't quote me on that.
It's got to be high.
It's in that range, in that general area.
And the problem is the disruption in the labor market that we have seen has been so vast and so long it's just going to take a very long time to dig out of it.
Thanks, Matt, for that call. We appreciate it. 614-292-8513. That's the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation with Doug Buchanan. He's managing editor of Columbus Business First, and also Bill Lafayette. He's owner of the economic consulting group Regionomics. You can also go to email and write us there at allsides@wosu.org. I hesitate to call it a potential development boom for Ohio. It's considered going to be the number one thing, and I'm not talking about casinos. I'm talking about the oil and gas exploration. The governor talked about it at his end of the year press conference. The exploration of the Utica Shale and the Marcellus Shale deposits. They're predicting something upwards of 200,000 jobs from this. I'm wondering what your understanding is of where those numbers come from, and if it's that vast, because the people are coming out now saying 200,000 is a lot.
Right. I don't know where they came up, how they came up with that specific number, but it's clear that there is going to be a lot of hiring out there because there's a lot of money being invested already in the exploration. I mean, right now we're still at the stage where there's a land grab out there where they're trying to secure the rights. And so we're just at the beginning of what's going to be a long process of setting up the drills, drilling, and then possibly processing, a vast potential if it lives up. So even if you're even just talking about the short term, there will be a burst of hiring out there as they get the exploration up and running. And then if everything comes out as planned, yes, you are talking about ancillary services and ancillary jobs that will just boom in eastern Ohio for a good number of years.
And that's an area that certainly needs some job growth.
Yeah, and you're seeing the colleges, again, going back to the training, Zanesville State College, some of the colleges out in eastern Ohio are adding programs for this, mm-hmm. and they're seeing a flood of applicants, and those applicants or those graduates are getting hired.
Mort in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mort.
Yes, I'm sort of following up on what one caller said, that housing maintenance is a much lower skill set than roads and bridges and sewers. I think our recession is due to the housing bubble.
It is.
And my solution is for legislators and private concerns to do everything possible to prevent foreclosures, maybe even declaring a foreclosure holiday for 2 years, encourage rentals to the current occupants for whatever they can afford, even if that has to be subsidized, and creating a national consortium of maintenance employing using private companies that are already there for rentals and hiring other people that could come to a desk at Lowe's or Home Depot and sign up. That would create lower skill set jobs. There's a lot of handyman skills out there. And this is so important because the current statistics I saw yesterday, 15 million homes liable for foreclosure in various stages. And for every empty house, several homeowners nearby are at risk because of the empty houses and the rundown houses.
This has been brought up before. It's been talked about, well, since 2008.
Right.
I mean, they've been talking about what can we do to stop this, but the banks aren't too high on messing with the foreclosure process.
Partly, remember, because first of all, they probably do not suffer when you tear down a house. They probably get a deduction from their taxes. Hmm. So they may not care, or they may figure with deep pockets they can just wait it out. So they may not be that interested in what happens to an empty house. Go ahead.
I was going to say, let's hear what Bill Lafayette has to say.
Well, even in the best of times, a bank can expect to lose a lot of money on a foreclosure. They do not want that to happen. It's got to be better to get something than it is to get nothing. As far as fixing houses up and stabilizing neighborhoods, that actually is kind of an appealing idea. I sort of wanted to talk a little bit about that before. And on top of that, you've got a rental housing market that is tightening. And so there may be some merit to that. The question really is that we don't have a whole lot of money to spend anywhere. And so where can we spend it where we get the biggest bang for our buck, the best benefit to the economy?
Thank you, Moore.
That's kind of above my pay grade.
Jeff in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, and I enjoy your show.
Thank you, Jeff.
One of the items that I feel that is a large challenge is the large gap between the high income level group and the lower income that are so dependent upon entitlements. And I see this in a rural areas, Appalachian area. How do these gentlemen feel that we need to lessen that gap to encourage those that do not have a good education and a good job to get them to higher income levels?
Well, I mean, that's a political question for sure. But I mean, really, the only way that you're going to get them to that higher income level is through the training and the education to find a different job than the ones that that they're holding now, or that are even out there. It's going to be a long, slow process. And as you mentioned earlier, Ann, it takes money to get that training to get into that higher bracket. I think that is purely a political matter of how to encourage or mandate that.
Well, I want to be apolitical on this. I think that the real answer to that question really is workforce development, and it's strategic workforce development. What we need is a workforce policy that very closely aligns with the economic development priorities of our region. I'm not convinced that we really have one to the extent that we really need it. I did a study on the IT workforce last summer that showed a big gap between what employers needed and what employers were seeing walk through the door. And a lot of that skills gap, honestly, was soft skills. The ability to communicate, the ability to work with other people, the ability to work effectively with customers and represent your company competently. That's certainly part of it. It's also understanding not only where the technology is, but where the technology is going. IT's got it rougher than a lot of industries, but industries throughout the economy are changing very dynamically.
And even on the soft skills side, I mean, there are organizations in Columbus that will help workers with that, but a lot of the funding that they rely on is public. And so unless there is a desire and a will to spend more money to fund that kind of training, It's going to be very difficult to get large numbers of people through those programs. Mm-hmm.
The governor has said that workforce development is going to be a big part of the next year and a big part of the work that's on his plate next year. Whether or not it includes developing those soft skills is yet to be seen. With me this hour, Doug Buchanan. He's managing editor of Columbus Business First. And also Bill Lafayette. He's owner of the economic consulting group Regionomics. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Millions of people around the world live in the shadow of active volcanoes. Under constant threat of massive volcanic eruptions, their homes and their lives are at risk daily from these sleeping giants. From Japan's Mount Fuji to the volcano submerged beneath Naples to the Yellowstone supervolcano in the United States, NOVA travels with scientists who are at work on these sites attempting to discover how likely these volcanoes are to erupt. Watch NOVA, Deadliest Volcanoes, Wednesday night at 9 on WOSU-TV.
And this is 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, we'll have an update on Ohio political news with a panel of State House reporters. Join us for Hour 2 of All Sides beginning at 11.
Support for 89.7 comes from OSU's John Glenn School of Public Affairs, offering continuing education and graduate degree programs designed for the working professional. More information at glenn.osu.edu.
Help shorten the 89.7 NPR News winter membership drive. Become a sustaining member. For every 100 sustaining members we receive, we'll eliminate one day from our upcoming membership drive. Visit WOSU.org and make your sustaining gift right now. And thanks for your support. Partly sunny skies for today, a high near 34. Clouds tonight, a low of 26. Some sunshine for Thursday, a little warmer with a high of 41. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking about the economic forecast for 2012 and beyond, what needs to be done, what's getting done, what might get done with Bill Lafayette. He's owner of the economic consulting group, Regionomics. He'll be at the Columbus Metropolitan Club today. If you want to learn more about that, we'll have a website link on our website at WOSU.org. Also, Doug Buchanan, he's managing editor of Columbus Business First. Questions or comments for them, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@WOSU.org. And Ruben downtown, welcome to the show, Ruben.
Thank you for the invitation to call.
You're welcome.
No one has mentioned Habitat for Humanity, and I was thinking that would be an opportunity for those who are unemployed in the construction industry to stay up to par in their skills and application of their skills. And I wonder how practical that is as a suggestion.
Well, I don't think it can hurt, but if we're talking about the number of jobs and the number of skill sets that are needed on a macro level, it's just not going to make much of a dent overall. Certainly for individuals, it probably could make some difference, but from the scale that Bill's talking about in his forecast, that's just not the numbers just aren't there.
Volunteerism, though, is highly recommended when you're unemployed.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
you've got to get off the couch.
You've got to stay involved, and networking is a huge part of finding a job and volunteering. You're going to work with a lot of people who are on boards who work for major employers, and you're going to meet other people. It's just common sense.
I never found a job through a magazine or newspaper ad ever.
Thanks, Ruben.
Yes, I would say forget the macro application. Think of the micro application.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Sure.
Yep.
Okay. Take care, Ruben. Healthcare. They're clamoring for people in nuclear medicine and ancillary services such as lab technicians, research assistants, and coders, whatever those are. But healthcare isn't necessarily doing that great in the job creation market. What's going on?
Well, I think what happened last year, and this is another of those funny statistics that may or may not be true, but there's some plausibility on this, because if you look back 20 years, healthcare nationally and locally has followed a very, very stable growth path. It is the easiest sector for me to forecast, because you just kind of draw a line out. There's your forecast. But the problem is, what we saw last year, or the last several years, was we saw employment growth get above that long-term path. And over the first half of last year, employment fell down below that growth path. Now it's coming back up to it.
Still growing, but
it is well.
But in comparison to the larger number, it's less so.
What we saw last year was that the impact of the decline in the first half of the year, and really, when you're comparing 2 years, you're looking at the trend in the former year and the latter year, and that's what's going on there. We're seeing month-to-month growth now, and I certainly expect that to continue into next year or this year.
And longer term, in general, you've got all the baby boomers who are using lots more health services, obviously, and so you're going to see that general healthcare growth nationwide. And then, if you look specifically at Columbus, Ohio State is building a billion-dollar new healthcare complex out here, and they're not the only ones who are building. All of the health systems around are building, and you keep asking, well, how are you going to pay for that? Well, they are expecting to be bringing in more patients, not only patients in Central Ohio, but regionally, out of state. They want to be specialized to bring these people in. So you've got to figure that they're going to need more workers. I think that there is growth nationally, and I think there's going to be specific growth to Central Ohio that will sop up some of those jobs that are
out there. And those are dollars that are coming into our region from outside our region, which is the only way that we can grow our economy long term.
Is worker development keeping up with that? Has that been an issue?
Well, I mean, I think that you're always, and especially with healthcare, you mentioned like coders earlier. I mean, that's a very specific thing for Medicare and Medicaid.
And it's critically important.
Yeah,
critically important.
Because
you don't make money.
Right. Unless you submit the proper forms to the federal government, with those diseases and procedures coded exactly correctly, you're either not going to get paid or you're going to get delayed getting paid. It's going to end up costing you money in the long run. So, I mean, that is actually a critical job in any healthcare establishment that you look at now, it's not something that is obvious. You can't just walk in off the street and suddenly be able to be a coder. I mean, you need to have that training to be able to do that. So, yeah, there may be retraining of existing healthcare workers that is going on, but it's just you're just going to need to be able to get the workers matched with the right jobs.
You know, training's a funny thing. They're talking about a 3-year college degree now. And you're talking about the lack of soft skills. There's a deficit in soft skills, and it makes you wonder. So you go to Columbus State and you get that 3-week certificate in logistics.
Right.
But what's that doing for you as far as developing you as a human being that's going to be able to do the job and carry out the program? Do we run into any kind of danger of over-focusing on this very explicit training without?
Again, it's got to be both and. There's a really cool program at Columbus State that's called the 21st Century Skills Program. And it literally teaches you those soft skills. And along the line, you learn how to write an effective resume, how to write an effective cover letter, an effective business communication. You're fitted out for whatever career you decide to go into. It's a great program.
And another way of looking at it is, you know, the easiest way to figure out how to properly act like a business person is to get hired and get into a business. And then you just look
internships.
Around. Right. And you know, whether and even if it's just a 3-week certification program that gets you hired and gets you in the door. Once you're in the door, then you can develop those skills. And also, I mean, especially with as lean as and efficient the staffing levels are at most companies these days, once you get into the door, if they have another job there that that requires a slightly different skill set, well, you know, I mean, that's your best opportunity to get into that job is if you are already an inside candidate.
Mm-hmm. There's still a few minutes left with our guest, Doug Buchanan of Columbus Business First, and also Bill Lafayette of Economic Consulting Group Regionomix. If you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Just a few minutes left. Government employment nationwide is in decline, historic decline, you note, although those are, as you mentioned in your report, Bill Lafayette, the function of high census-related unemployment in 2010. But they should continue to weaken. In 2012, you said local government is especially vulnerable as state support declines. Often in central Ohio, we think we're insulated from a lot of government employment fluctuation.
Well, the historic pattern has been government grows no matter what. And what we've seen over the last few years is that government has actually declined. I went the other day and looked at the history of government employment growth statewide. The only time that we've ever seen government employment decline like this statewide was between 1943 and 1947. So another way to look at it is that the government realignment that we're seeing now is comparable to the peacetime conversion at the end of World War II. So the point, though, is that government employment is important. It is not as central to our economy as a lot of people think. Our percentage of total government employment is only a touch above the national average, which is really unusual for a state capital. And that's because we are one of the largest state capitals in the nation. Smaller state capitals, governments like 25%.
A larger percentage overall, right.
Yeah, here it's, I think, 15.9%.
It used to be bigger,
like
though, when Columbus was smaller.
Right.
It used to represent more.
Yeah, we actually have, our economy has grown faster than the national average for decades. The 2000s were unkind to us, but overall we've been growing faster than average, and it's these other industry sectors that are becoming the drivers of our economy now.
And state jobs, it should be noted, or government jobs, tend to be good jobs.
Oh, yeah.
They're higher educated, and they pay better, and they have the benefits, the all-important benefits.
Right.
Gene in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Gene.
Yeah, hi. I've been kind of depressed the last couple of years. It seems like all the jobs that are coming to Ohio and central Ohio, too, are jobs that are going to hurt our air quality or water quality or quality of life in the future. It's fracking and chemical companies that go along with it. It's a racetrack in central Ohio. It's casinos. It's just, I don't know. We're already a state with the highest level of industrial toxins in the nation and among the highest cancer mortality in the nation. And we don't seem to be focusing on things like biomedical research, green energy, education of healthcare workers, finance, you know, jobs that our children are going to want to stay in Ohio because this is a good state with educated people and clean air and things like that.
Well, I don't know that those latter jobs that you were talking about are not coming here. I mean, I think that we do have healthy financial services, biomedical. I think that those are there, but some of that just is not an immediate, especially if you're talking about R&D or technology, they're just not the immediate job creators that something like a casino will be. I mean, casino is going to have, I mean, the gambling in Ohio is going to create thousands of jobs, and you've got to figure that there's no way Ohioans would have voted that in after so many times of voting it out if there wasn't that need from the joblessness.
I think part of the thing to remember, too, is it's those jobs that make the headlines in Doug's newspaper. And what doesn't make the headlines in Doug's newspaper are the several jobs that every little employer in Central Ohio is adding. Over the last 20 years, 81% of all new jobs created in Ohio were created by companies already in place. And that isn't the next bright, shiny thing. It is the financial services jobs that are so important here. It's biomedical research and all the things you talked about.
Getting back to a concept that Gene brought up, though, is that quality of life thing. You know, how much does that really matter? Quality of life doesn't matter to the landmen that are out there running all over northeastern Ohio, you know, getting contracts with landowners for the shale deposit exploration. How much of a big deal is that anymore? Isn't it taxes, taxes, taxes? That's what they're talking about at the state level, lowering taxes, finessing it, as the governor put it. What really matters anymore?
Well, I mean, I think it matters I think it matters much more when times are going well. You can talk about benefits to Ohioans and education funding. I mean, there's any number of things that you can fund in an ideal world when times are going well and you have endless tax revenue. When Ohio hits a place where it's hit in the last few years, you almost, I don't want to say you have to lower your standards, but I mean, you have to go with what's available. And you know, whether it's the oil and gas exploration, in eastern Ohio, I mean, I think that industry, number one, would say that, I mean, I think they would object to some of the characterizations of it, but I don't know that we have a whole lot of choice.
Well, the point being that they're not moving there because of the quality of life. They're moving there because that's where the natural resource is.
Right, but I mean, we can't turn our nose up at it and just say that we don't want it here because it's going to possibly spoil our drinking water.
Doug Buchanan, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Doug Buchanan is managing editor of Columbus Business First, and also Bill Lafayette of the Economic Consulting Group, Regionomics. Thanks for joining us, Bill.
Thanks a lot, Ann.
Bill will be at the Metropolitan Club today. You can go to our website at wosu.org/allsides and check out the link there if you want to learn more about that. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.